This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is Joy 94.9's Family Matters podcast, your light-hearted look at parenthood and rainbow families, sponsored by Berry Street. Did you know that Berry Street seeks members of our LGBTI communities to become foster carers? Not only do they have a proud tradition of training and embracing LGBTIQ carers, they officially support marriage equality. Learn more now at berrystreet.org.au. A proud Joy sponsor for over 5 years.
Family Matters is brought to you today by the letters LGBTIQA and the number one.
Hello, it is me, Frank Lowe, and my son,
Mr. Briggs.
We've got some wonderful, exciting news. What are we excited about right now? I wrote a book.
Wait a moment, no you didn't.
Yes, I did. Of course I wrote the book. Who else do you think wrote the book?
Kids like me who have gay parents.
Okay, so technically you're right. What did I do? I rearranged the stories.
Yeah, you like put it in order.
So what is the story? What is the name of it?
Raised by Unicorns.
Raised by Unicorns. That's right. Then you consider, I'm a unicorn, right? Like you consider me to be a big, beautiful, amazing unicorn?
Yeah.
That's a good answer, by the way. Do you know what kind of stories they're talking about?
LGBTQ people.
That's sure right.
And sensitive people.
People that have parents just like you that are LGBTQ+. Do you know when the book comes out? This is a big deal.
On the 12th?
Yes. So June 12th.
2018.
Yes, this is 2018. Yes. So everybody, stop what you're doing. Go order the book. I promise you won't be disappointed. If you are a gay parent, lesbian parent, any LGBTQ plus parent, and if you want insight into what kids are going to think or people are going to say to your kids, this is exactly the book that you need. All right? Say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Buy the book.
Buy the book today.
On the line from Connecticut, I've got the fabulous and very famous gay dad, very well known for the Gay at Home Dad Twitter following, Frank Lowe. Frank, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. This is wonderful.
Now, Frank, you've got an amazing new book, which I think is almost on the Amazon number one, called Raised by Unicorns, which is an anthology of kids' stories from LGBTQI families.
Yes, exactly. Which is something, there have been things that are somewhat close to that that have been done in the past, but it, when I say the past, the last kind of thing was about 20 years ago, and it really didn't reflect what's happening now. So this is very relevant right now, because we hear so often about stories from the parents, but when do we ever get to hear, well, what the hell are the kids think? You know, what are the kids dealing with? How are they growing up? How are they adjusting? And so that's what I love about this book, is that it just opens that door wide open. Nothing is held back.
Look, we're going to delve into the book. Before we do that, I mean, you're really well known for your really popular Twitter feed at Gay at Home Dad. Let's kind of travel back to your story of becoming a parent. You and I are from the same generation. We both probably didn't grow up seeing any LGBT representations anywhere in the media. This is before internet.
And if we did, it wasn't in a positive light.
No, not at all. Even rarer to see rainbow families. Right. Did you always want to be a dad?
You know, it's something that I had in the back of my head is as a thought, but it wasn't something that I thought was attainable, if that makes sense. So it took me meeting the right person when I was 21, which is now he's now my ex-husband, we'll get into that, to really kind of solidify that idea and be like, okay, I think we can do this. And that was in 1997, so we were still even kind of pioneering then.
Yeah.
Obviously, we didn't have a child until recently-ish. We'll get into that too. But it's something that I'm a family man, so it's something I definitely wanted. I just didn't really know if I could do it or not. And I didn't know how to go about it was the other thing. So obviously, you know, two men don't have the right parts to make a baby. So, you
well,
know, it's kind of like,
yeah,
and I didn't know about all that stuff when I was younger. So
I always wanted to be a parent while I didn't want to get married. I always wanted to raise kids. It's always that kind of thing going, well, I know I've got the parts, but how do I go about it?
Which is funny you touched on that, because in the book, you will notice that it's definitely a little more heavy on the L.
Yes.
And I think that's part of why. I think it's because, again, the parts are there.
The parts are there.
You have more, I mean, I'm just going to say it, there's more opportunities and different, you know, options than what two gay males have. So, yeah, you know, our options are somewhat limited, but
totally.
I think, yeah, but it's at least it's becoming in America here, which I'm hoping in Australia, it's becoming a little bit more broadly accepted. It's becoming less strange. How about that?
What were the pathways available to you, and how long ago was that journey? How old's your son now?
Yeah, he is now 9. He just actually turned 9 on Monday.
Happy birthday, Briggs.
Yes, exactly. Happy birthday, Briggs. So the way it worked was we actually moved here from Chicago. So I live in rural northwestern Connecticut. So, yeah, not exactly. It's kind of I don't know how to describe it. It's in the middle of nowhere, basically, is where we live right now. It's
small population, too, isn't it? It's not a big, bustling metropolis.
Yeah, 20,000 people in my town, which is kind of, for me, as someone, I'm a city person, so it's really been a strange adjustment. But so what happened was we actually got on the adoption list when we lived in Chicago. We lived in Chicago for a bit of time. This was maybe about 12 years or so ago now.
So adoption was legal in the U.S. for gay dads?
Yes, it was. But at the time, though, there was no other rights that we were granted, meaning like you couldn't get married.
Yeah.
There wasn't even partnership and all that kind of stuff. So there was all the extra risks that we were taking, even in adopting a child, like getting our names on the birth certificate back then would have been close to impossible. Well, fast forward a few years and we ended up moving to Connecticut. So when we started the adoption process in Chicago, was going great. You know, everything was fine. We had to take classes, et cetera. There was all this stuff we had to do.
Yeah.
And then once we moved to Connecticut, because his job, he had a wonderful job opportunity that we just, nobody would pass up what he had.
Yeah.
So we move up here. And so we had to start the whole process clear over. It's just because unfortunately, the way it works is you have to work with a local adoption agency.
Yeah.
So we got settled. You know, we got like what we picked in our head, what we felt was like the picture perfect home, you know, like kind of like if you, I don't know if you have any images of Connecticut in your brain, but I always tell people it's pretty much exactly what you think. It's like, you know, the long sprawling yards and the big colonials and all that kind of stuff. So we did it. We got ourselves set up first. And then I think it was December of 2007 or 2008. I don't want to get it wrong. But is when we actually got really serious about getting on the adoption list up here. So the way it worked up here was different. Up here, we get on a list, and then the birth mother chooses you.
Oh, wow.
It's wow is right, but it's also think about how nerve-wracking. You are literally exposing yourself and just praying that, like, you're going to get chosen.
Do you put out there for, like, do you do a video?
One-liner? So much promotional stuff involved, tons of pictures and stuff like that. One of my favorite stories I tell people is that after about a week or two of us getting, like, things really going, the adoption agency called me, and they're like, we need you to, can you possibly grow out a beard? I'm like, okay, why? Yes, I can. Why
bears? Like, popular dad like choices?
Well, I'm not going to lie. I have a little bit of a baby face. And apparently people were coming back and saying that I look like I'm 18 or 19.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I know, right? That's my little funny joke. So I grew a beard. I've had one since. And it's kind of become my thing. But, so I grew a beard, and then this is what happened. So I grow the beard. We get on the list. Literally 6 weeks after getting on the list, I got the quote call, which was basically saying, you've been chosen, yada, yada, yada. It felt like winning the lottery. It really did. And I didn't know what to think. You know, I remember like pacing around the house as I was talking with the lady and just, you know, writing down notes here and there and just kind of like, it was very like, oh my God, this is happening.
Family Matters is brought to you today by the letters LGBTIQA and the number 1.
Literally 6 weeks after getting on the list, I got the quote call. You've been chosen, yada, yada, yada. It felt like winning the lottery. It really did. And I didn't know what to think. You know, I remember like pacing around the house as I was talking with the lady and just, you know, writing down notes here and there and just kind of like, it was very like, oh my God, this is happening. And then towards the end of the conversation, so of course I didn't get to this in the end of the conversation. I'm like, well, so when does she do? 9 days.
Oh my God.
So my joke has always been, you know, straight couples, what, they get 9 months. We get nine days. So I had to whip that. Yeah. I had to whip that nursery together like it was, you know, like I was on a show, like a reality show. I literally like, yeah, I had like 48 hours in my head. Like, I got to get this thing going. And so,
you know what I love about the myth of like getting a nursery together? Because I've just, we've just given birth, got the nursery and all that together and all the big furniture. But realistically, she barely spends any time in it because she's still in the bassinet in our bedroom. So it's like, I killed myself to get the colors right, to get the design right. I'm such, you know, I joke that I'm a gay man in a lesbian's body, but it's perfect, right? But, you know, other than change a nappy in there, I don't go in that space.
She'll get there, I promise. Yeah,
she will.
Oh, yeah. They eventually, especially I'd say about one or so is when you're going to, you know, and that. But yes, I know exactly what you mean. I did the same exact thing where I hustled like crazy to get this nursery together. And then just like you said, he was in the bassinet forever.
Yeah.
And we only went in there for like changing table purposes and things like that. But, so anyways, but I was given 9 days and of course he came 7 days after. So he was even 2 days earlier. And we got the call. We got to go to the hospital.
Oh, wow.
I witnessed him being born, which I thought was beautiful. And I think that when people say like it's gross, I'm like,
no.
What are you talking about? I'm like, you know, I don't know. I thought it was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen.
And did we get able
to leave the hospital with our names on the birth certificate?
No way. That's massive. Did you get that experience of that beautiful skin-on-skin contact? Because that's really important.
Yep, I was the first to hold him. yeah, I was the first to hold him, and I was the first to do that, like you said, the skin-on-skin thing. And what's so funny is my Facebook just popped up because his birthday was on Monday, so it was right around this, and it showed literally that was the picture. It was me with him on my chest. You know, it was like really cute. Because, you know how they do like the memories. Yeah, so I just saw that. But no, we got the full parenting experience from start. You know, we were there for his first poop, we were there for his first everything, you know what I mean, like you name it, we were there.
And that's the thing, so, adoption is still really hard in this country, and only recently some of the states have only started relaxing the laws to allow LGBTQI people to even adopt. Like that's how hard it has been in this country. So was surrogacy ever an option for you guys? Because it's such an expensive option.
There was two reasons why we didn't want to go down that road. One was, I'm just going to say it, the cost, about $150,000. I think it's come down, but at that it was $150,000.
Guys here are still talking about $100,000 to $150,000.
Exactly, yeah. And then on top of it, we kind of made the decision, like, you know what, there's kids out there that need us.
Yeah.
So let's start with that. And then our goal, what we wanted to do was then do surrogacy down the road, which my ex did end up doing, but after we got divorced. So my son has a brother at my ex's house that my ex surrogated after we divorced. But I know, right? That makes the story even crazier. But it does. Little complicated. But no, so that was how we came up with the choice. We even looked at fostering. You know, there were several other.
That's a really viable option for a lot of gay dads here, because fostering has always been available because there are so many kids that need homes and need people to take care of them. And we're always trying to call out for people to be foster carers for short or long-term stays.
Yeah. Well, see, and now that I'm 41, I'm not going to lie, I would love to have another child if I get lucky enough to meet somebody, but most likely I wouldn't be starting from scratch with a baby. That would be most likely the route we would take would be fostering, you know. Yeah. So, I always hate, it sounds like I brag about my story, but really our adoption story was very blessed. We had everything lined. It was just perfect, you know, and my son's my son, and I couldn't imagine life without him. Like he's my favorite thing that exists. And, and really everything, even like this conversation has all kind of been because of him. He's been the source of inspiration for me since he was born. So.
It does. It just shifts. Like, you know, you kind of think you prepare for it. There is no preparing for what it does to your heart. And the way it just expands just perspective just changes on absolutely everything in the best way possible.
I always say what happens when you have a child is you end up a good parent will relinquish their selfishness.
Oh,
like that's when you pretty much have to put yourself aside. Like that's really when it happens is when you have a child. It's like, okay, I'm no longer number one. Like he's number one. So yeah, definitely.
Now, gay at home dad, how did you choose to be the parent at home? So the primary, like I'm the primary parent at home because I don't make that much money and my partner does. So that was kind of a, you know, even though I'm not the birth mother, it just made sense financially. It was a no-brainer for me.
Kind of the same with us. Like I said, my ex, his job up here was so wonderful. He's an attorney. Mm-hmm. So he was already well-established in his career. I was, not that I wasn't, I did retail managing for luxury companies like Gucci and Louis Vuitton, and I loved that. You know, kind of got. I just love being involved with fashion and all that stuff. Well, believe me, here in northwestern rural Connecticut, none of that exists. Like we have a gap. You know, that's about it. And believe me when I say the pay wouldn't even come close. So it was kind of like, why use up my time? It just didn't make sense. So that's kind of how we decided on that. And it really was almost, again, like I said with you, it was a no-brainer for us. It was just kind of like, okay, these are the shoes I need to step in and fill. And I did. So,
I'm really curious because I know for myself, even though rainbow families are a bit more prevalent now, you had this 9 years ago. Even I am experiencing, you know, rocking up to see the maternal health nurse. And if it's not the regular one, getting the look up and down going, oh, hang on a sec. You're not a little boy.
Right.
You're actually a lesbian. This is a rainbow family. You're in Connecticut. So you're in a very small, let's call it a small town. I think that's, it's safe to say that.
Village almost.
And I feel pretty secure in the hospital because I knew they had training from rainbow families.
Sure.
What was your experience? Were you kind of like, how did you negotiate that with the other rainbow families? What was the knowledge of people around you? Were you kind of always having to educate people 9 years ago in this space?
Yes and no. So basically, I am the kind of gay person that I just don't accept. If somebody's going to have a problem with me, like I almost don't accept that. Yeah. I just won't, you know, they're not a part of my life, I guess is a good way to put it. And I'm quick to pick up on things like that. So I was very fortunate that I met a girlfriend up here that had a baby at the same time, and she brought me into her baby group with all the other girlfriends. So I it was pretty so that's how I kind of ushered my way into the whole thing, and they helped make it not a big deal with me. And I always say that I'm like, I think that if you yourself make something a big deal, people are going to pick up on that. You know what I mean? If you're anxious about it, people are going to pick up on that and feed on it. If you're just like, this is the way it is, this is my kid, then people are mainly going to accept it. And if they don't, F them. You know what I mean? That's the way I kind of felt about it. So really, obstacle-wise, none that I can really, nothing that crazy. I mean, I did have a few people when he was really little would ask me things like, oh, where's his mother?
Yes.
And I'd say, well, I don't know. Yeah. I'm his dad. He's got two dads, so I don't know where his mother is right now. I'm like, we speak. I'm like, I don't know where she is.
But, yeah. And
I was just very honest.
Yeah. I still get people saying to me, so who's the real mother? And it's like, really? Really?
Oh, yeah. That's terrible.
But, people are still learning. And and it's really hard sometimes, you're just there to, get your baby checked out or get a vaccination or something. And you're like, I don't want to have to put my positive activist face on. I just want to worry about my child right now. I don't want to educate you in language. I just want to make sure.
It's true. Yeah. I mean, because one of the things that I always said was really interesting, which is that when me and my ex used to go out, for all people knew, we were just two buddies eating at a restaurant, right?
Yeah.
The minute a child came into the picture, everybody knew what it was. We were a gay family. It was very obvious. So I did notice some stares and things like that. But my favorite thing to do when somebody stares at me is literally stare back crazily until they stare, until they move their head. And then I continue on with the stare to see if they check back. And I'm like, I'm still staring. I have my own little ways of kind of dealing with that stuff. But I in general, I tend to ignore it. I think I walk around like a horse with blinders on, and I just kind of see what I want to see. And, I have my own shade of rose-colored glasses that I tend to use. So,
And that's the thing. Babies and little kids, they're such conversation starters. Like, people actually want to come up. You know what? I've actually been really excited by some of the people are just so excited to see a baby that it kind of does diminish some of that negativity that I was expecting. It's actually been a really positive experience. Because babies just melt everyone's heart. It's kind of nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just wait. Toddlers do the same. You've got a few years more of that melting the heart. Actually, my kid's 9 and he's still melting hearts. So
I'm like, totally. I've seen him on YouTube.
I think although someone just referred to him as a tween, and that made my life. I was like, wait, is he? Like, wait, at nine? And apparently from nine to, yes, he is considered technically a tween.
Oh,
and I'm like, okay, so I've got a young tween. I just didn't even think about that until somebody said it. And I'm like, oh, my God. So, but yeah, no, it's like you said, it elicits joy, I think, having a baby, you know, so I think that's just part of it. So
your ex-husband, so mm-hmm. I read somewhere that you got married pretty soon after Briggs came into your beautiful yes. world. There's always this pressure I think a lot of us feel, you know, about our relationships and raising a family. Because you were known so well as being this kind of gay dad, did you feel a pressure from the community when your relationship broke up? Was there something, like, did you feel any
Very
kind
good
of...
question. Yes, yes. I feel, that's a big thing that I kind of talk about is yes, we definitely, there's a guilt almost that I felt, and I'm not going to speak for him actually, because I can only speak for myself, but I felt somewhat of a guilt or that I let my community down.
Isn't it crazy?
You know,
I know.
Because we had just gotten the right to marry. But what I do say is on the flip side, that also means that we got the right to divorce.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, through my Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff, people that I talk to, they just reach out to me and they say, hey, Frank, I'm kind of going through the same thing. Like, what do you suggest I do? Like, I'm scared. And what I always say is, do everything you can. Mm. Literally do everything you can. Exhaust your options. Mm. Go through everything. Save that marriage if you can.
Mm.
You know, that's certainly what we did. We went through every single option you can possibly imagine. Counseling, you know, you name it. We did everything. And then there does come to be a breaking point, and that's unfortunately where we were. We still maintain great contact and communication. We co-parent, I think,
fabulous.
Really well with him.
Yeah.
So he's happy, and I think that's kind of your litmus test as to whether or not you're doing a good job. You can tell if your kid's happy or not, you know, and so he seems very well adjusted, and believe me, he takes advantage of the whole two Christmases, two birthdays. Oh, yeah. He knows how to
Wouldn't
exploit
we all?
Us. Really. Oh, yeah. He knows how to exploit us like crazy. Obviously online, long story short, I did the gay at home dad thing in 2012. I just hopped on Twitter with kind of like this funny name. It took off, you know, it kind of got me this, you say famous, I say gamest. I'm like, it's not that many gay people know me, but you know, that's pretty much about it. In 2009, we're married. And so, yes, when we got divorced, I was already kind of a Twitter, whatever you want to call it, Twitter. People looked up to me. People looked up to us.
Yeah.
I was literally selling gay family to people. I was literally saying, this is what a gay family looks like.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure on Instagram to just put pictures up. We would go on like Disney cruises. And I just kind of wanted it to be, you know, I wanted people to see, and really especially for gay youth, like, you can do this. You know, that's kind of what I wanted to do.
I think because we've not grown up with it as well, it's really important to reflect
exactly.
that image. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So when the separation, we separated for at least a year or two before we actually divorced. So when that was happening, I didn't obviously mention a word of it or anything like that. When we got divorced, it was June 1st of 3 years ago, so 2015. I made a really bad decision. On Father's Day, which was like 3 weeks later, I was kind of seeing a guy who was quite, I'll just say he was a little younger than me, let's just say that.
Mm-hmm.
And we went on a vacation. We went to Fort Lauderdale because I did not want to be around Father's Day because it was the first year that I was not going to be with my son. Yes. So I was like, instead of moping around my house, let's get to Florida. So what I did before revealing to the public that I was broken up is I stupidly took all these pictures of us on this trip, and I start noticing like these comments are coming in like, what is going on? Are you cheating on your, you know, like, and my follower like went way down, you know, people are just dropping me right
and
left.
Wow.
And like, I didn't really think about, and then all of a sudden I'm like, holy shit, like I didn't announce that we were divorced.
You didn't
so
come
I had
out
to kind of,
again.
No, I didn't. So I resolved it all with a video is what I ended up doing. I put it on YouTube and I explained, and it's actually a letter to my son that I kind of wrote and read out loud, and it kind of explains why we're getting divorced and da 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 da, and it's not his fault. So I put that out and I kind of quelled all my naysayers at the moment. But yeah, I really messed up in the very beginning there, and I've been very careful since not
to. It's Florida. You have the mojitos, the sun. I mean, you can kind of.
Exactly. Understand. That's what I'm saying. I was like, yeah, I was feeling it. So, you know, I put the whole thing up on Instagram, and then it was like, oh God, what did I do? So I had a little backlash from that. But since then, like I said, I've actually now I'm making myself known as the gay divorced dad. So it's kind of like I have even more whatever you want to call it, stuff to talk about, you know, more things to talk about,
again,
more layers.
It's so important because there are other men out there like you and there are other parents out there like you. And, you know, now that I've, you know, we've got a child in our lives, for me, I know more single mums than I know single dads. And I just think, oh, my God, with a newborn, how do single mums do it? Because I know quite a few women that have done it on their own and I just think, oh, my God, hats off. You know, I praise you how you manage it. To tell this story is equally, like, we're at that point now where, yes, we know more gay parents, but we need to be hearing diverse stories within our own community. So it is essential that we're hearing from single gay dads. So how was that, you know, like, how was life
working
changed?
For me?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I tend to attract, it depends on the day of the week. How about that? So
yeah,
I tend to attract, I attract a wide variety of different people. So it really is kind of and then, you know, I hate to say this, but I'm not a big fan of New England gay people in general, just because they seem very insecure, shallow. It's just, I'm a Southern, I grew up in Missouri, which is more Southern. So I have kind of that like open heart, open, you know, I like understanding, like I'm you know, like if somebody messes up, I'm not going to just instantly get out of their life. And I've noticed that people up here are just very like aloof almost, like, you know, if like, oh, okay, well, we were together for a month and a half, but you know, you messed up one night, so bye, you know? So it's kind of, I haven't yet met my match, if you will. So it's tough. And I am kind of somewhat seeing somebody right now, but that's what I literally feel like I always say is I'm somewhat seeing somebody. So I had one good serious relationship, but he lived in New York. So unfortunately the distance did end up kind of getting to us over time.
And is it because you're co-parenting now that you're staying based in Connecticut for Briggs's for Briggs's life?
I'm trapped here. Yeah, and I mean, again, I say that I'm writing my own memoir, and one of the chapters is actually trapped in CT, and it's kind of like I let Briggs know that's not his fault. Like, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else but here because of him. So I make sure that he kind of knows that I'm kind of saying it in jest.
Yeah.
But it is the truth.
Day 101 of my captivity in Connecticut. You know, it's kind of like, you know.
Yeah, literally. I'd be in Boston or New York, which are both 2 hours from me, kind of right in the middle, if I had my choice. But obviously, I need to be around my kid. And that was something that was discussed when my ex and I did divorce. We didn't actually get lawyers, none of that stuff. We got a mediator. We just kind of sat at a table, discussed everything, had an agreement worked out. So it was very, I think that we just did it right. It was very not, it wasn't heated. How about that? That's a good way to put it. So.
And that's a really important message to get out there. But it doesn't have to be that way for us. Did marriage equality make gay divorce easier? Especially with a child
I would have to say yes. I mean, it definitely did. I mean, here's the thing. I'm very glad that we did get married and then got divorced because with divorce, it comes with, you know, I haven't worked in years because I was a stay-at-home parent, so I needed some sort of protection. And so it did offer me some protection that I needed. And you know, my ex has been wonderful and has stepped up. You know, everything's kind of worked out. It took a while, you know, I'd say that about the first year. Everybody always jokes, like, about, you know, divorce is so great. Like, once you get out, you feel free. That's not true. It was like a whole year of me, like, drinking wine in my bed. You know, like, it wasn't, you know, what you thought. And even if I did meet somebody, it was still, like, you know, I had this little nugget of regret in my head that I just couldn't kind of get rid of. And, you know, and I still love my ex, but I'm just not in love with him. That's kind of what I say.
And I know when I was telling people, oh, I'm going to be the stay-at-home parent for as long as I can, they're like, what about your work? It's really kind of taking off. And, you know, security, you know, those kind of basic security things. And especially as a woman to build that security. It's like, but I understand the alarm bells that people have. We do give up our careers. We do. It's a full-time job. And I don't have any regrets. You know, I can always go back and go to work. And when I need to, I will go back and get work.
Okay, that's fortunate for you. See, I am in a position where I cannot really do that. So I am in now, I'm looking at things like possibly opening a business or things like that. You know, that's kind of where I have to look because this giant blank space in my resume doesn't make sense. And maybe that's because I'm male, you know, I don't know what it is, you know, like why as a male, like, why didn't you work for 10 years, you know,
wow,
whatever, while
yeah.
I was raising our child is why, but like, that doesn't necessarily fly.
Yeah.
So, And fortunately, like I said, I have another book deal, my memoir. And then I just sold my children's book, which is a big deal. Because it teaches diversity in a fun way. So I sold that. So I've got three book deals in the works. Yeah, so that's good. It's just, they're gambles. That's
of course.
It's just like, a, you know, anything, any kind of business, it's a gamble. So I need, like you mentioned a few seconds ago, that security and all that. And that's why my little bit of advice for anybody that's a stay-at-home parent is just to have a contingency plan. Mm-hmm. Just doesn't mean that, you know, it's ever going to happen, but just have a plan just in case, like, you know.
What I'd love to talk about next is this amazing book you've got out called Raised by Unicorn, which is an anthology, stories from kids raised by LGBTQ parents. Now, knowing the times that we're in, I see that most of the kids have been raised by gay or lesbian parents, so not bisexual and trans, but I think that is going to be something we're going to see change over the course of years. What kind of inspired you to put this book together? Because you edit all the stories.
Sure. Yeah. So really, and you know, it's funny, let me touch really fast on like what you just said about how it's heavier on the L and the G, but the B and the T are really not, that is present in the book. I agree. I think in several years that's going to change, which is why I see this as a volume.
Yeah,
so
wonderful.
I see this as volume one. You know, Raised by Unicorns, volume one. So volume two, maybe in 5 years we'll revisit, maybe 10, whatever is appropriate. And I think we're going to see a change. You know, it's going to be like this moving snapshot as to what's happening in the world. But so how it all came about is the publishers themselves found me through Twitter. So I've said this to anybody on Twitter, and people are always like, how do you get all these opportunities? Just because I simply have an email address that's for Twitter only in my profile, and I get all these, you know, amazing opportunities out of it.
But it's also because you're very charming on Twitter, too. You know, not everyone on Twitter is going to get a book deal.
I'm pretty snarky.
It's fun.
Believe me, I'm pretty snarky. But, like, I think people know, like, I'm on their side kind of thing.
But
I'm definitely, like, my old profile used to say I used to be a bitchy gay guy, and now I'm a bitchy gay dad. It's kind of like, you know, but I play with it. You know, it's kind of fun. So what happened to me is this wonderful opportunity, Kleist Press, that's the publishers, they're the nations in the U.S., they're the largest LGBTQ plus publishing company. They just came to me and they said, we have this idea. It was pretty loose. You know, they're like, we want to do this. Like, you know, do you want to take the reins? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, firstly, can I name it? They're like, of course. You know, so that's when I went to the, you know, thinking of different names. You know, I had, oh my God, you should see the cutting room floor. Like some of the titles that I had thought of were really bad. Like one of them of which was like Children of the Scorn, you know, like after writing those things down, I'm like, okay, I think I know what people need. People need positive.
Yeah.
And I think Raised by Unicorns is a riff on the term Raised by Wolves, obviously.
Yeah.
And it's been really welcomed with open arms. Everybody and the people, the writers of the book, the kids and the people, they're now referring to themselves as unicorn kids.
Gorgeous.
I'm starting to see unicorn kids kind of pop up like on Twitter and things like that. I'm like, ooh, did I start? Like, that's great. I think that's really good. So they came to me and they said, yeah, you know, do you want to do it? I'm like, oh, sure, you know, absolutely. So my job then was to find the story. So I had to put out, and I did use social media everywhere, like a big, you know, a cattle call, basically. I'm like, who?
I've got this power. I'm going to use it for good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I will say I got close to 100 submissions, and I'd say maybe 70-80% were lesbian parents.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So then I kind of had to go back and kind of change that cattle call a little and be like, if you have two male parents or two trans, you know, I kind of had to do that just to make sure I rounded out the book.
Yeah.
So I whittled that down from 100 to like 14 stories.
Oh, how hard to kind of go.
Oh, it was hard. I cried a lot at my computer. Let's just say that I kept a box of Kleenex right by me just because some of the stories were really heart wrenching.
Yeah.
And I made sure to include a couple of those in the book because I think it's important that you see every side of the story.
Of course.
And And then what happened was, and I forgot how he contacted, I think he contacted me through Twitter, an ex-Major League Baseball pitcher, his name is Joe Valentine, he came forward to me and was like, hey, I was raised by two moms, I'd love to do something for your book. Oh, I'm not much of a writer, awesome. You know, I'm like, how about this, how about I interview you? And we put that like at the back of the book or something. And he's like, great. So that's how the book closes, is this interview with him. And people just love it. They think it's like, it's you can literally hear his voice and it's hilarious. Like he's from like Long Island, New York, and he sounds, you know, you can kind of almost hear it come out. And yeah, it's so that kind of rounded out the book. And yeah, that's kind of how I just went for stories that were as diverse as I could possibly find, different ages. So the age of
I
each
wanted to
author,
ask, yeah, what are the chapter? Ages of? Because if you've got a baseball player, I'm assuming you know right. adult. So what's the age ranges by the authors in the book?
Teens to 40s. So it's all over the place. Yeah. My youngest writer, her name is Michaela, and she's 15, and I swear she's going to be president one day. her writing blew me out of the water, and she's actually attended a couple of the book signings, and she was on the panel, and she's just so well-spoken and eloquent, and it's like, oh my goodness, like you should be, like, she is like the prime example of, like, you know, a unicorn kid, if you will. She's just wonderful. Yeah, so it does. It runs the gamut, though. It's all different ages. All different, and I also was looking for different parts of the United States. That was the other thing that I really wanted to show. So it was kind of a few different things. Yeah.
I had the opportunity during the marriage equality campaign to interview, and I'll never do it again because of the work that it involved, interview 17 kids from rainbow families, and the ages ranged from 6 to 15. So that was crazy.
Oh, wow.
But what resonated with me is, yeah, of course these kids wanted marriage equality, but there was just this greater empathy and social justice message that the kids kept repeating throughout the day, you know, wanting to support refugees, because I would ask every single one of them, you know, what would you want to do if you were prime minister for the day?
And all
these kids were interviewed individually, the parents weren't in the room, and the same message kept coming out. They wanted to support refugees, they wanted to protect the environment, and it just blew me away. Like, there's just beautiful future activists and future leaders. Mm-hmm. It gave me so much hope, and I know for us, the podcast, when we released it, it was really important for rainbow parents to hear those stories, because surprise, the kids are okay. In fact, they're better than okay.
Yeah, the kids are all right.
Fabulous.
Yeah, exactly. Wasn't it an Australian study done recently-ish that basically
they're doing pretty bloody well?
Yeah, that discussed exactly this, that they are more well-adjusted for the most part because they're exposed to more. I definitely sense that from the writers in my book. What I kind of notice is it seemed as though the more involved or open the parents are or were, the more involved the children or people were. That's what I kind of noticed. It all depended. Like, the parents kind of lead the way. So, you know, there's a couple of stories in there where the parents lived kind of a closeted life. So the children kind of took that shame with them, unfortunately. And they themselves had to kind of come out of the closet, if you will, and let people know, like, I've got gay parents, you know, just because it was more shrouded in secrecy, which is sad. But, you know, that's just the reality of the situation. Some families are going to be like that.
Because this has been out in the marketplace now, still very fresh, very new. But how has the feedback been?
Fabulous. I quite literally haven't run across any kind of negative reaction so far. The only thing that people have kind of picked up on is what I've already stated, which is that it is definitely heavier on the LG. But again, somebody who, I think she was just doing a regular story, was asking, are there any trans parents, you know, in this book? You know, and I know for a fact one of them is, but it wasn't meant to be discussed, and it really was nobody's business because, once again, it's not about the parents, it was about the kids.
Yeah.
So we kind of did this whole back and forth, and I'm like, there is a trans – and she was trying to get me to, like, say who, and I'm like, I'm not going to out a person just because of your – because you need me to, like, validate that there's a trans person in this book, you know. But, yeah, it's – So I definitely – I stand behind everything that I wrote that is in there, and the editing, and I feel like it brings people a really good sense of empathy, which you kind of touched on earlier, and I think that's really what, if there's one thing I want people to take away from this book, is empathy. You know, these kids they're not looking for sympathy. They're not saying, like, oh, please feel sorry for me. They're just, like, saying, hey, get me. Understand me. You know, so, yeah.
So Briggs he's got a tiny little passage in this book. He doesn't have his own story. Are we hoping to, you know, volume 2, maybe Briggs gets to have his own essay published? Or is he kind of like,
that. No,
I'll do a YouTube
that.
Video
I,
instead.
I never push him. Yeah, we do have a YouTube show that we do. It's called Driving Mr. Briggs.
Yeah.
And it's under the same name, Gay at Home Dad, if you're listening and interested. It's very cute.
We'll share all those links on our page. They're really cute.
Yeah. They're fun. But he's kind of slowly realizing what I am and what I'm doing. And like, it's kind of like, you know, he's starting to kind of get it. I will leave that space open for him if he wants to, but I will not pressure him.
Yeah.
Never. So right now, you know, his main interest is Star Wars. So if I said to him, hey buddy, we want to write a chapter about Star Wars. Yeah. I'd get a whole, you know, flipping chapter out of that. No problem. But,
yeah.
You know, so yeah.
I love it. He'll open up going, Frank, you are my father.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. Oh my God, that's perfect. That's exactly what he'll. You're right. He has to.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh, you just gave me his. I'm going to tell him, like, that's your opening line.
He's going to love
that's
it.
Great. Perfect.
Is that the best way for us here in Australia to order a copy of Raised by Unicorns? Just jump on Amazon.
Yep. I will say this, if you're listening, it keeps selling out, but they keep restocking it. So
fabulous.
Just be patient. Yeah, which is good. But like, originally they were telling people like they wouldn't get them until July or August. But then I just got a bunch of people saying like, oh no, I got it last week. I'm like, perfect. So they keep restocking it. So yes, absolutely, Amazon.
Thank you so much, Frank, for, you know, pulling this together and getting it out there, and, you know, using that Twitter power for good.
Yeah, I always try to. That's been my whole mantra is, and I keep saying through this whole thing, like, what I really want to end is how people refer to the way I parent my child as gay parenting. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what the hell is that? How does one gay parent my child? Like, what am I doing gay? Like, sure, his hair may have a little bit more style in it than other kids. You know what I mean? But it's like, how am I gay parenting him? You know, I'm just a parent. We're all parents. That's one of my big takeaways, I always say. Like, thank you so much for having me. This has been a wonderful conversation.
You've been listening to Joy 94.9's Family Matters podcast, your lighthearted look at parenthood and rainbow families, sponsored by Berry Street. Did you know that Berry Street seeks members of our LGBTI communities to become foster carers? Not only do they have a proud tradition of training and embracing LGBTIQ carers, they officially support marriage equality. Learn more now at berrystreet.org.au, a proud Joy sponsor for over 5 years.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.